That was all together. And most into the afternoon, seeing the sunshine, temperatures around 7 or 8. But there is a risk of further heavy rain across England and Wales, increasing the flood risk, particularly across Wales, the South West Midlands and the South West of England too, to take us through the night and into Thursday. Tomorrow night, a cold, frosty and in places foggy one for Scotland and Northern Ireland.
Thanks very much indeed, Matt. And a very good evening to you. Now on Radio 4, William Adamsdale continues to read from The Telling Room, in which the journalist Michael Patiniti tries to understand the scandal that lies behind the production of possibly the world's greatest cheese.
Purificación Molinos de las Heras, nicknamed Puri, grew up 18 miles from Guzmán. After marrying Ambrosio's father, she exchanged one small village for another, though it seemed to her like a different country. Even as a girl, she possessed a dignified beauty, her acumen glinting behind wide-set eyes. She was at once warm and a bit apart, aloof, some said, but most of all, she was sensitive. When she became a farmer's wife, she was put in charge of making the family cheese. And then, at some point in Ambrosio's childhood, she'd stopped. Years later, when her son came to her in the hope that she might remember the recipe, she was fuzzy on the details. One thing she would never forget, however, was its taste. The whole family, including Puri, had almost supernatural senses of taste and smell. Although it was a queso típico, a house cheese set on the kitchen table to be sliced and nibbled on at all hours, the Molinos cheese, as she recalled it, was much stronger than Manchego, say, with an earthy vein and a nearly overwhelming tang. It was a hard cheese, hard to cut, hard to categorize, the kind that forced you to savor each bite. Making it again soon became Ambrosio's overriding obsession. He purchased a dozen or so Chura sheep, a hardy breed. Space was cleared, pens were repaired, feed bins built. The sheep huddled together, bumping bodies, masticating in wonder, Jesus-faced and smelling of Rasta wool. The idea was to let them graze freely by day over the expanse of the mesa, then milk them in the barn and transport the milk in canisters up the rough, rocky road to a small building that had once been a horse stall, across from Ambrosio's childhood home. The stall soon looked like the lab of a mad scientist, strewn with ladles and measuring spoons, knives and triers, cheesecloth and wax, vats and thermometers. Ambrosio kept a detailed journal, marking the locations where the sheep grazed and what they ate. If they munched on thyme and chamomile, for instance, that taste came through in the milk, which created pleasant hints in the cheese. For Ambrosio, cheesemaking was both beautiful and primal, an act of faith. He considered this cheese his own personal mission on earth. After months of experimentation, the grail was at hand, and he rode forth with almost superhuman zeal. At first, he kept his labors a secret, but Guzmán was a typical Spanish village full of gossip, and everyone had an inkling soon enough, as it was hard to conceal the sheep or the large silver canisters of milk moving between the caseta and the stall. It became harder still to transport molds of cheese up through the town to the bodega, where in close proximity to the other bodegas, they were unloaded and shuttled into the cave for aging. When a new batch was ready for testing, Ambrosio, his mother, and his friend Tomás, like a college of bishops, retired to the cave. Ambrosio flicked open his pocket knife and carved out a few pieces, which he handed around. Before taking a bite, he'd ask the cheese, "Are you the one who will remember us?" Each tasting called for an evaluation. Did the cheese need more salt? Was it time to move the sheep? This went on for months, years. Over time, Ambrosio added innovations, finding that the cheese tasted better when soaked in olive oil, and if it sat in the dark of the cave for a full 12 months. Making the cheese was a lot of work. Inevitably, the field suffered and yielded less. There were compelling reasons to stop this cheese project. His young children, debts piling up. But faced with the sheer will of Ambrosio, no one expressed doubt. And one day, he made believers of them all. The three judges gathered. Ambrosio lifted a wheel from the shelf, and even as he pressed in the blade of his knife, by smell and feel alone, Ambrosio declared, "I think this is it." And his mother said, "This must be it." Was it surprise that overtook him when he realized he'd finally cracked the old family recipe, unbridled joy? No. It was the return of that simple certainty that he'd felt when he first stood in that field with his father years before and pledged he would resurrect his family's cheese. "Puta madre," he said to the cheese. "Welcome home." They hurried to his father. He placed a piece in his mouth and let it soften, and his face transformed. "Me cago en la leche de Dios," he said. "I shit in the milk of God." Then he asked for another piece. Watching his father eat that cheese had been a spiritual moment for Ambrosio. The son had set out to complete the cycle and had. Now that he'd solved the mystery of the recipe, he consulted his notes and went back to work. As those cheeses ripened, he passed them to friends in the village. The cheese had been made as an act of love and generosity, and he gave it away in the same spirit. The villagers tried it and realized it was very good. They passed it along to friends in the next village and the next, the circle continuing to expand outward. The cheese lingered and haunted, and its legend soon spread throughout the region. Ambrosio decided to start selling it. His wife had invented a name for it, Páramo de Guzmán. Páramo being the highland plain above the village where the sheep grazed. His brothers invested in it so that Ambrosio could grow his family cheese operation into a small business. It started flying out the door. A cheese buyer from Madrid appeared and bought as much product as Ambrosio could part with. Soon, it was being sold in gourmet stores in the capital and went from Madrid to London, where it was sold at Harrods. It was heady stuff, and Ambrosio was rightly proud, but not altogether surprised. His cheese had become a little prophet in a modern world that needed one. The cheese kept conquering the world. The King of Spain, Juan Carlos, had occasion to try it and ordered more. Meanwhile, Ronald Reagan, Frank Sinatra, Queen Elizabeth, Mikhail Gorbachev, and Julio Iglesias all ate the cheese. As sublime as it was, demand soon outstripped supply. Ambrosio needed to expand. More sheep, more equipment, more cheesemakers. But he had no interest in sitting at a desk or looking at cash flow summaries. He was a creator, wild and free. He turned to his best friend, Julian, now a lawyer and businessman. He seemed to have the Midas touch in all his enterprises. Ambrosio did not need to look further. At 35 years old, they were still much as they had been as teenagers. They spoke with the same intonations, made the same gestures. Most of all, they were and would always be connected by the same principles, the decency and honesty of the embodiment of the old Castilian. Julian formulated a business plan for expansion and promotion. He handled the big picture, the logistics, and Ambrosio made sure the family cheese continued to live up to its name, meeting with his cheesemakers every morning and testing the new batches for quality control. "My mission is to make sure we don't forget the old way," he said. "That is mi grandísima filosofía de la vida." But the decision to sell and market the cheese was in retrospect the biggest mistake of Ambrosio's life. "The real trouble," he said, "started with the new factory. Julian bought in new investors, and we signed contracts to form a conglomerate," he explained, "investing in a large new factory, state-of-the-art equipment, and hiring more staff." Ambrosio was eternally grateful to Julian. It was a blessing to worry only about making the best cheese in the world. The year was now 1991. One day, Ambrosio's secretary, who was also his aunt, took him aside. "We have money problems," she said bluntly. Money problems? It seemed preposterous. Here they were, making one of the most coveted cheeses in the world. For every order that went out, three more came back over the transom. What money problems? After the disbelief, Ambrosio propelled his large frame three steps at a time straight up to the office, where he began pawing through order forms and receipts, bank statements and contracts, reviewing for the first time all the detail he'd left to others. And then, Something terrible dawned on me, he said. He sat bereft before us, his secrets spilling forth on the table, shimmering like a catch of fish. The cheese didn't belong to me anymore. It belonged to him. It was in his name, or the names of those with whom he was collaborating. He was very clever. Who was very clever, I asked. Julian, said Ambrosio. He stole the cheese. He put the contracts before me, knowing I would sign them without reading. At first, he thought he could put everything back together again, so I took the contract, and I went straight to Julian, he said. Hombre, tell me, what's the meaning of this? Julian cleared his throat. I trusted you. How could you? When Julian finally spoke, he denied it all. Yet the documents didn't lie. Ambrosio knew it was true. He had been checkmated by greed. The pain and loss I felt wasn't for the loss of money, but because I was betrayed by my best friend. I went back to the cheese factory, and I told the cheesemakers what had happened and that I was done. When I walked out that day, all but one followed me. How would he tell them all? His parents and his brothers, his children and theirs someday, for years afterward. He couldn't taste anything he ate. Julian stole my soul, Ambrosio said. 8 hours after entering, we exited the telling room. Day had turned to night, which had turned to very early morning. 1:32 a.m., read Carlos's watch. We said our goodbyes. Dolo, Ambrosio said, short for hasta luego, and translated as see you later. We shook hands. We swooped down the hill and drove into the valley, past silent grapevines and pellets of sheep shit. Then suddenly came a yellow explosion, like flashbulbs firing, sunflowers. Perhaps I needed to move after having sat so long in the cave, but before Carlos had time to question me, I pulled over and shot out of the car and waded into the field. The flowers wafted a mild, leafy smell, the sky cathedraled overhead. I could hear the hum of the stars, and standing there I had, well, call it what you will, an epiphany. In that moment, I knew I wanted to live in a realm with my family around us. I wanted to become a cobbler or a farmer, working shoulder to shoulder with my brethren. By now, Carlos had trudged out into the field where we exchanged delirious words. Different planet, huh? I said. Incredible, said Carlos. When we left to return to the car and subsequently to go back home, I already had it in my mind to return. That cheese was now part of my legacy. Ambrosio's story fired not only my sense of empathy and justice, but also invoked every betrayal visited upon every other human who ever lived. What was it that I saw in this poetic cheesemaker? Freedom? Guidance? A simple life? He was a link to the past. Everyone is rushing forward, he said to me, so I must go back. That's what he was trying to say to me when I returned home and tried to get on with my ordinary life. Go back. So I did. I began what became the familiar act of return, the drive to Newark Airport, the overnight flight, the rental car, and the drive up and over the Guadarrama mountain range, the narrowing road beneath the wheel. I was going back to make sure Ambrosio Molinas had been, in fact, real. For a magazine story? I didn't know, or have a plan. I wasn't playing a journalist. For once, I was playing myself.
William Adamsdale was reading from The Telling Room by Michael Pataniti. The book is abridged by Eileen Horn and produced by Clive Brill. And it's a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4.